before I came up this morning, pray that the Lord will give us open hearts and open minds. And this morning, we really need an open heart and open mind. Because what I say may not be what you think I should say. But nevertheless, I would say, because God says. So, have open ears, open mind, and an open heart to listen to what I feel that the Lord is speaking to me through the study of this part 2 of Babylon. We continue our studies on significant sites. I have changed from cities to sites because I think the title looks more attractive. Significant sites in scriptures. We finished part 1, Jerusalem, and we dealt with the past history and the present controversy. Then last week, we went on to part 2 of our studies, Babylon, and we touched on Babylon in secular history. I think perhaps I might not have made a good delivery of that study, because history is never my forte. I failed history throughout my whole school life, except the last year. So do not be surprised, and don't fault me, please, if I did not give a good presentation of history. But today, I'm going to deal with eschatology. That's my favorite part, prophecy. So I hope I can better present this study to you this morning. And we are going to study about the mystic Babylon, the great harlot, in essence. But before we do that, we shall be dealing with the ecclesiastical Babylon in Revelation 17, and then we shall deal with the commercial and cultural Babylon in Revelation 18. So, two particular chapters will come before us this morning, Revelation 17, Revelation 18, with regard to Babylon. Now, after last week's study, two questions should arise in your mind. Anyway, they arose in my mind. And that was, like Habakkuk also had that question, which led him to be confused in a way, and which I too was confused. Why would God choose a cruel pagan nation like Babylon to chastise his corrupted, covenanted people, Israel? Why? True, his people had been corrupted, but he had made a covenant with his people that he would give his people a holy land and a holy vocation. If they had been corrupted and they had gone wrong, punish them by all means. But why use a people that is more cruel, more iniquitous, to punish them? That is very difficult to understand. You use a cruel party to punish a less cruel party. So, that was Habakkuk's question. Alright, we are prepared to accept that God is sovereign, and he would use whoever he needs. And in fact, Babylon was his tool to punish Israel. So, would Babylon go free and go unpunished? Isaiah 13 tells us that Babylon one day will be punished. Actually, by right, God should be punishing Babylon for their sins, for their abominations, for their corruption. But at the same time, Israel must be chastised for their disobedience. God chose to kill two birds with one stone. He used Babylon to punish Israel, and after having punished Israel, he would punish Babylon. That would be his program. So, was Babylon's destruction by the Medes final? We learned in his yesterday last week that the Medes were the one who conquered Babylon, and after that, the Grecians took over. Was that the final one, final outcome of the end, or the end of Babylon? Babylon. What role would it play in the day of the Lord? Because in Isaiah chapter 13, there's a mention of the day of the Lord. The day of the Lord is definitely a coming day. More about that as I go on in detail. So these are the questions that we would like to ask. As Habakkuk asked, as any one of us would ask, why is her designated suffering compared to a woman traveling in childbirth? Now that is another phrase that is used in connection with God's future judgment. So would Babylon be punished for what they did to Israel? Habakkuk complained. Very quickly, let me just give you an outline for you to go through if you want to. Habakkuk chapter 1 verses 1 to 4, Habakkuk's distress because he could see that God seemed to be indifferent to his supplication. Lord, how long are you going to allow this iniquitous nation to go on? Why is God indifferent to sin and suffering? And Habakkuk was complaining about his people's sins. How long are you going to just be blind to all the sin? Then God said in verse 5 onwards, never mind, I'm going to bring in another nation, and I'm going to punish them for what they did. God's intention of discipline, he would bring a nation, Babylon, the Chaldeans, and he would use them as his axe to cut down, so to speak, Israel for their sin. And these Chaldeans or Babylonians, what kind of people would they be? They would be cruel, and they would be very fast in their action and attack against Israel. They would be as fast as the horses or eagles, and they would be very successful. They would kill and they would destroy, and then they would say, who can challenge us? They would scoff, and they committed that sacrilege, that they are so strong because of their own God, not because of Israel's God, but because of their own God. And so would such a situation of Babylon against Israel be just overlooked by God? Habakkuk's dilemma. God, I cannot understand. And he said, okay, like Job, I'll wait what you are going to do. And this is this morning's answer. I'll wait what you're going to do. Let us never think that when things are wrong, when things go against us, whether in life or even in the nation, when things are not going, why is God so silent when China sees the persecution of Christians, so many of them? Why is God silent when so many Christians are being persecuted and so many are killed in the Middle East and so on? Why? That was Habakkuk's dilemma. That is also ours. So, wait and see. Don't have a foregone conclusion regarding God. God is unfair. God is not right. God is not just. Let us wait and see. God has his own sovereign will and program. God says about this Babylon. Will Babylon be punished and will the destruction be final? Yes. Babylon will be destroyed. But if we look at Isaiah chapter 13, verses 19 to 20, we read, "And Babylon, the glory of kingdom, the glory of the kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldeans' pride, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It will never be inhabited, nor will it be settled from generation to generation." It will not be settled from generation to generation. And so you find that Babylon, since the fall to the Medes, up to now, sort of still is in ruins. But is that final? That after all, Babylon will not be inhabited? Because Isaiah chapter 13, and by the way, Bible commentators cannot agree on Isaiah chapter 13. Some say that Isaiah 13 describes the result of Assyria defeating Babylon. Some say it is with reference to Babylon defeated by the Medes. So there's a controversy there. It doesn't matter. What I want to find out is, in spite of these two controversies, whether it refers to the Assyrian captivity or the Babylonian captivity, the result of either God will punish Babylon for what they do, then comes these very peculiar passages and texts in Isaiah chapter 13. "But wild beasts of the desert will lie there, their houses will be full of owls, ostriches will dwell there, and wild goats will appear there, the hyenas will howl in their citadels, jackals in their pleasant palaces. Her time is near to come, and her days will not be prolonged." Alright? Coming judgment. Now, comes this verse, Isaiah 13:20. "It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation." Here comes the judgment. It shall never be inhabited. It shall never be dwelt in from generation to generation. Now, up to today, we find that indeed Babylon has not been inhabited properly, but there have been attempts to rebuild Babylon. I pointed out last week, Saddam Hussein was a good example. He tried to be the Nebuchadnezzar III. He tried to build up Babylon. He built up his palace. And he looked like he was going to succeed. Hey, in the list of expectation, we find that he was cut down while in the midst of his height. So we see God has his own plan. Man may plan, but God has his own plan. The question now is, will Babylon be inhabited? It was defeated by the Assyrians, 689 BC. After that, it was rebuilt by his son, just a few years later. And then we see the rise of Nebuchadnezzar the II that we are so familiar with in the study of Daniel's Daniel's epistle, Daniel's prophecy. Then we see the Medo-Persia conquering Babylon. And after that, what happened to Babylon? Will Babylon be punished for chasing Zion? Jeremiah 51:20-26. By the way, Jeremiah chapters 50 and 51, for your information, are another two very controversial chapters, as Isaiah 13 and 14. Bible commentators are not agreed whether which one would point to the Assyrian captivity or the Babylonian captivity. Again, I am not going to be bothered by that. What I'm bothered is, what happens to those texts with regard to prophecy regarding Babylon's future? Will Babylon be punished? Jeremiah chapter 51, verses 20-26. Perhaps I would like to read that. Jeremiah chapter 51, verses 20 to 26. Thou art my battle axe. Please note, the Lord said of Babylon, thou art my battle axe and weapons of war. With thee, please note, with thee will I break in pieces the nations. With thee will I destroy kingdoms. Verse 21. With thee will I break in pieces the horses and his riders. With thee will I break in pieces the chariots and his riders. Verse 22. With thee alone will I break in pieces man and woman. And with thee will I break in pieces and young. With thee will I break in pieces. Okay. With thee will I. With thee will I. Babylon was God's battle axe. And he would destroy all those by with Babylon as his assistant, so to speak. After that, please note verse 23. I will also break in pieces with thee the shepherd and his flocks, and with thee will I break the pieces. Sorry, that should continue with verse 22. Now, after using Babylon as God's axe to destroy his enemies, would Babylon go free? Verse 24. I will render unto Babylon and to all the inhabitants of Chaldea all their evil that they have done in Zion in your sight, saith the Lord. Behold, I am against thee, O thou destroying mountain, saith the Lord, that destroyest all the earth. And I will stretch out my hand upon thee, and will enroll thee down from the rocks, and will make thee a burnt mountain. And they shall not take of thee a stone for a corner, nor a stone for foundations. No foundation stone, we learn this morning. No foundation stone at all. Everything will be destroyed, and roll thee down from the rocks, and will make thee a burnt mountain, and they shall not take of thee a stone or a corner, nor a stone for foundation, but thou shalt be desolate forever, saith the Lord. Okay. Was this after the Babylonians had attacked in the sea Assyrian captivity? Was this a reference to the Babylonian captivity for Judah later? Whatever, we don't know. We are not sure. But one thing I'm sure, it says there, Babylon will, thou shalt be desolate forever. Did Babylon become desolate forever after the captivity? After the Assyrian captivity? No. Then, what does this mean? That Babylon will be desolate forever. And here is a very important principle that we must know with regard to interpretation of prophecy. That is what we call the law of double reference. The law of double reference in biblical interpretation of prophecy is that while a prophecy may refer to a particular condition and circumstance at that particular time, it also has a reference to a future event that has not yet come. And that is what is known as the law of double reference. And here, I believe, is an example of a law of reference. That while it would be true in a way that Babylon will be destroyed, but the fact that it will be destroyed forever will only come in a future generation. I shall prove my point as I go on. So ultimately, we find that Babylon will be destroyed. And that is the proof in Revelation chapter 17 and Revelation chapter 18, which we are going to study. Let's go through again, in case you don't get it. Babylon was completely destroyed in 689 BC. Was it forever made desolate? Babylon was destroyed, was defeated, captured by the Medes. But they did not destroy it. And in the centuries that followed, there were glimpses of Babylon coming up here and there. Alexander the Great was the last one that destroyed the Medo-Persian Empire. After that, how was the Babylon? Right. Now are the texts that are in these chapters that give us a prophecy that seemed to have been fulfilled and yet not fulfilled. Why did, for example, Isaiah in chapter 13 mention the day of the Lord? The day of the Lord. In the day of the Lord, Babylon will be destroyed. What is meant by in the day of the Lord? As far as we know, in the context of biblical prophecy, the day of the Lord will always refer to the Great Tribulation period. Therefore, would it suggest that while Babylon would be destroyed at that particular time and at that particular stage by those particular regimes brought against them, the ultimate fulfillment of that prophecy would be in the future during the days of the Great Tribulation? Isaiah 13:6, 9, 13, 11, four times at least the day of the Lord is mentioned in Isaiah. And of course, Bible commentators are misdirected by verse 17 when it says that the Medes will come and attack, and referring this to the Babylonian captivity and not the Assyrian captivity. But there are a lot of differences. So if you are interested to look up commentaries, you can find the differences. Then there's also the mention of the woman in travail. The woman in travail also is a phrase that is used with regard to the tribulation. Why is it used in this text? So, the point now is, when is the ultimate destruction of Babylon? We know for a fact Babylon will be destroyed. When will it be? When will be the ultimate destruction of it? And again, in what form? Will it be Babylon in the figurative form or in its literal form? What form will it be? That literally Babylon, having been destroyed in the past, will now be rebuilt so that it can be destroyed again? Now this is something we have got to go into and find out. Right. We ask the question now. What is Babylon's final end? How will it end finally? Revelation chapter 17 mentions Babylon in great detail. And in that chapter, in verse 5, we read, that there would be a woman, a prostitute, a harlot, riding on a beast, and on her forehead would be a name, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots or prostitutes and of earth's abominations. She would be labeled on the forehead like this. That would be chapter 17 of Revelation. What is this all about? Chapter 18, we read, Babylon is fallen. Babylon the Great is fallen. And verse 21, a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone, cast it into the sea, saying, thus with violence shall they that great city, Babylon, be thrown down and shall be found no more. No more. Now only it says, no more. And we know that Revelation 18 is with reference to the last days, not the past days, but the end days during the Great Tribulation period. So, Babylon, therefore, and its destruction will be in the future. But in what form? So, we have got to examine this in a greater detail. Now, because of the mention of Babylon in Revelation chapter 17 and 18, we need to see how the book of Revelation is set up. We must understand the interludes and the chronology of the book of Revelation so that we do not get distracted and also misinterpret things. What do I mean by interludes? Now, interludes are parentheses. You see, what we must understand with regard to the book of Revelation is we must not take each chapter following one another as a development in sequence, one by one, chronologically. But in between, as we see the development of the various events, we find that certain parentheses, certain interludes are put in between these events to explain and amplify certain things that have been brought up. And these are what we call interludes. For example, we find Revelation, right, chapters 1 to 5, we won't mention because they are historical accounts and also a time when the church has been raptured into heaven. The judgments coming in from chapter 6. From chapter 6, we have the sealed judgments. Then, 1, 2, 3, 7 seal judgments. When the seventh seal was opened, we find that seven trumpets were blown. So that the seven trumpets are actually not following the seal judgments, but the seven trumpet judgments are in the seventh seal judgments. And after the seven trumpets have been blown, we find that in the seventh judgment of the trumpet, seven trumpet blown, the seven bowl judgments took place. So let me explain again. In the seventh seal, there would be the seven trumpets. In the seventh trumpet, there would be the seven vials or seven bowls. And this would be the chronology of the book of Revelation. In between these events, these judgments, there would be certain chapters explaining what would happen. For example, chapter 6, we find an explanation of the event, of the situation of those people who have been saved during the Great Tribulation. They are now in heaven. Chapter 12, you find Satan chasing after the woman to be born. Chapter 13, you find the beast coming out from the sea and the beast coming out from the land. Chapter 14, you find the witness of the 144,000. Chapter 17, our chapter, Babylon. Chapter 18, Babylon. So, chapter 17, chapter 18 do not occur after chapter 16. You must note that. It's most likely that chapter 17 would take place somewhere in the middle of the Great Tribulation. Chapter 18 would be the one taking place at the end of the Great Tribulation. Because after chapter 18, chapter 19, the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. So this will give us a perspective of Babylon in the last days. That Babylon will be destroyed. In one aspect, in the middle of the tribulation, so to speak, and then finally Babylon will be destroyed in another aspect at the end of the Great Tribulation, before Christ comes. So, chapter 17 of Revelation, what is it all about? It is a reference to the religious system of the world to be judged. The harlot sitting on the beast. It's a system, a religious system. I explain that afterwards. Chapter 18, you see the secular world which had been supporting Babylon will then be also destroyed following Babylon's destruction. Chapter 19 to chapter 20, we have the return of the Lord. Chapter 21, we have the reign of the King of Kings, and so on. As these chapters do not concern us, we shall just skip. We shall now go to chapter 17. But just before we do that, a quick background to understand chapter 17. Remember, this would be what we had covered last week. Babylon was the cradle of civilization located on the shores of the river Euphrates. It was a city of corruption founded by Nimrod, who was himself a very, very personality against God. Genesis 10, 8 to 11, and his generation sought to build a tower. But he called the city he had found Bab-el. What does that mean? Bab-el, the gate of God. El, referring to God, his God. That he was building Bab-el in the honor of his God, against God. Then there was his attempt to build the Tower of Babel. God came down and God gave it a name too. Babel, confusion. When the nations that were gathered, when the people were gathered there were scattered and they could not understand one another, and the project was dissolved. Babylon later became a world empire before it fell to Medo-Persia. It will be the center of condemnation as a satanic religious system opposed to the true worship of God, which we shall see, show to you presently, and as a political powerful city bearing the name Babylon as its capital. Both will be destroyed. Revelation chapter 17 and 18. Alright, with that, we shall now go into detail. Comments on other chapters. Again, let me say, chapter 17 would have reference to the ecclesiastical Babylon. In other words, it has to do with the church. 17, 1 and 2, invitation to see the vision. 3 to 6, introduction to the harlot, Babylon, the harlot, a mystery, Babylon, the mystery, the harlot, mystery Babylon, the harlot, the mother of prostitutes. Then, chapter 17, verses 7 to 13, we have the interpretation of what John saw. So, the outline of chapter 17 will be verses 1 and 2, invitation to see the vision. 3 to 6, introduction of the harlot, who she was. And 17 to 13, interpretation of what John saw. And then finally, the destruction of Babylon in that battle with the Son of God. Revelation chapter 17, verse 14. Right, let's study chapter 17 now in great detail. Verse 1. We read of the woman that sitteth upon many waters. What does that mean? We read in verse 2, kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and earthly inhabitants made drunk with the wine of her fornication. What does that mean? Alright, let me try to explain this to you now. I will look at it, this passage in chapter 17, under three headings. Description, interpretation, and application. Description will be taking the text from the scripture of what we are introduced to. Interpretation, we are not left to interpret the text in any way we like, because the angel interpreted the text. For example, it says, number one, referring to the woman that sitteth upon many waters, the angel interpreted it as, the woman is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. Alright. It is a city. It has tremendous influence over the kings of the earth. What could it be? It's a woman. I suggest, therefore, that it has reference to a false state religious political church. We need to have to look perhaps at a state church as represented in Babylon. The beast, the woman sitting on the beast, we are told the woman would be that great city. So it's a city. It could be referred to as a state, and it would have to do with religion. So it's why another thing is it's called a mystery. That the word mystery should not be attached to the name of the harlot. It should be, as it says here, the mystery of interpreting this name harlot. This harlot is a mysterious one. And mystery is always used in the New Testament of something that was hidden in the past but revealed in the present, and with reference to the church. And therefore it could be that this beast had to do with a state church that is corrupted and abominable. Second, it says there, the woman that sitteth upon many waters, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and earthly inhabitants make drunk. Interpreted for us in verse 15, the waters are peoples, multitudes, nations and tongues. This state church has great, tremendous influence over nations, over people, over all kinds of different races and so on. So it's a very influential state church. Could it be an ecumenical religious church or system controlling great nations and languages? So we have to look for a general ecumenical entity that all these nations will subscribe to. And you can find nations, all nations, being represented in this woman. We are told, kings of the earth have committed fornication, and who are the kings? Those are the nations who are drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Verse 14. Now, that is the same as chapter 14, verse 8. So, these people who drink of her fornication are the nations under her influence. The nations have become part of a religious system. This religious system is very influential. It has control over all nations, all tribes, so to speak, all tongues, and they all come under her influence to drink of her fornication. Now, I am suggesting that this has a reference to the Romanish system. I want to be clear from the very beginning that even as I refer this possibility to the Roman Catholic regime and system, I refer to the system and not to the Roman Catholics. There are many good, innocent Roman Catholics. But it's a system that I'm referring to. Papalism that I'm referring to. Last July, I was in Rome and I visited the Vatican City. And in the Vatican, that Sunday, you would see crowds and thousands of people coming together to visit the Vatican. Why? Because that Sunday at noon, the Pope would come out to give a blessing for a few minutes, and then that's all. But for that blessing to be received, thousands of people would queue up outside the Vatican City, and they would queue up try to go into the city itself, the Vatican, in spite of the many security measures taken. And what for? All to have a little peek at the Pope that will come out. That's where the Pope will come out in the balcony, show his face, give a blessing, and then go back. And after that, all the crowd will disperse. Just to receive the benediction for that short period. And that's what is happening week after week, week after week. The great influence of Romanism. Let me prove my point further. We are told that this beast, this woman, has a scarlet colored beast full of names of blasphemy. Verse 3. What does it mean? Two colors stand out, red or scarlet and purple. And in Romanism, these two colors stand out very properly. The Pope always wears red. The cardinals always wear purple. And so you have the scarlet and the purple to identify them. Names of blasphemy. The beast that was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. Roman Empire ended about the 5th century AD. There's no more Roman Empire today. Although you have a Roman state, the Vatican. Alright? So, the Roman Empire walks. And is not in the time now. But will be in the future. When Satan will come out and influence the woman, all right, and after that it will be judged and it will send into perdition. So it would probably refer to the revived Roman Empire, and that would be the same as reference to the image in Daniel's Nebuchadnezzar's image, which was seen in the book of Daniel. And this part would be the foot and the toes. It says there, she sits on seven mountains, seven heads and ten horns, on a beast of seven heads and ten horns. And we are told that the seven heads and ten horns refer to the mountains on which she sits. Therefore, the seven kings, five are fallen, one is the other yet to come. In verse 9, what does all that mean? She sits on seven mountains. Now, Bible scholars agreed and disagreed on this, that Rome is a city on seven mountains, sitting on seven mountains. So therefore, it might be a reference to Rome because of the seven mountains, sitting on the seven mountains. Again, five fallen, referring to perhaps some Bible commentators say, five emperors at that time, beginning with Augustus Caesar, right down to Domitian, seven of them. Five of them passed, one of them still existing in the time of Nero, and then the last one is to come. So we should expect somebody to come in the future. Ten kings with no kingdoms and yet to receive power as kings. There will also be ten kings, and these kings will come simultaneously at one time, not one after another as with the others. But these ten kings will come, and they correspond to the ten toes in Daniel's vision. So, there will be seven successive Roman rulers and ten contemporary kings that will appear at that time in the revived Roman Empire. Even he is the eighth of the seven. Oh, this final picture brings in another character. Although there are seven kings, but there will be an eighth. The eighth is not a subsequent of the seven, because it is part of the seven, and it is part also of the beast. So it is part of the seven, which make it the eight, and it is also part of the beast. So we have here one who is basically associated with the Roman Empire as well as the revived Roman Empire, and he will be the great one. Of course, we know by now that should refer to the Antichrist that will be coming. Now, some people say that the five beasts that are referred to may not be the five kings, but may refer to the five empires. For example, the seven heads are seven kings. Well, there are the Egypt, all these are world empires in history, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecian, Roman, revived Roman Empire. Then, it says it is part of the beast. The beast would be the beast in chapter 13. And the beast would refer to the same world empires. For example, this beast in chapter 13, it has the face of a lion, that's Babylon. The feet of a bear, that will be Medo-Persia. Look at the feet. The body of a leopard, that will be Greece. And then we have the lion, the bear, the leopard, and then you have the ten horns. Seven heads and ten horns that would appear. So you find that this beast corresponds with the beast in chapter 17. As you can see there. Alright. With that, let us go on. Verse 4. The harlot's adornment, purple, scarlet, gold, and precious stones, pearls, the golden cup, full of filthiness and fornication. Her abominations and adulterous mystery, Babylon the Great, drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs. What does it all mean? The angel does not interpret. Verse 4, the harlot's adornment. But we know by now that it should refer to a false state religion. As I pointed out, that will be the Vatican. The Vatican is a state by itself. It has its own currency, it has its own bank, it has its own postage. In fact, when I was there, I bought a postage, the Vatican state postage. It has its own stamp. It has own its own currency. It is by itself. It's a state. Alright? And then we find that it's religious because of the purple and scarlet colors there. Gold, precious stones, pearls, and the cup, where it boasts of containing the blood of the Lord Jesus Christ, which they drink of it every time they take part of the Mass. Her abominations and adorations. That would be, therefore, pointing to a false state religion. Then it says there, her abominations and adulteries, mystery Babylon the Great, drunk with the blood of the saints. Now, Babylon is notorious for its false religion. As pointed out, Nimrod was the one who founded idolatry and the false religion and built it up, leading to the Tower of Babel. Semiramis was his wife. His wife was alleged to have a very miraculous baby. She was not married, but somehow she had a miraculous birth, giving birth to the son, Tammuz. Tammuz later on was supposed to be killed by a beast, but he rose again. And this was the false interpretation of the birth of the Lord Jesus Christ by a Virgin Mary, his birth, his death, and his resurrection. And this is the history of Babylon. And perhaps, in a way, Easter has a link to this history because of the pagan background that's associated with it. That's for just for your information. Or could it be, if not the Roman Empire, the Roman Church, what about the ecumenical unity of world religion? We should expect the world coming together, you know, all the various religions coming together to form this Babylonish entity. Alright? So we need to look out for that in the coming days. So, as I said, again, I refer this to the Roman Catholic Church system. I do not refer this to Roman Catholics. Please do not mistake me. It's a system. And today you find that the system is accused and alleged. You can find the internet of great adultery, of great fornication, of great sexual harassment among the priests. This is nothing new. In the days that develop, we shall find this better. And we find that even the Pope closes an eye on all this. And that's why there's all the hullabaloo over this issue now. So, we need to look out for this system that is corruptible and abominable in one sense. It says that they are drunk with the blood of the saints. The system is notorious for the persecution of Christians. How many so Christians have been killed by them? We don't have time to go into all this. Finally, verse 14, the war with the Lamb. There will be the war with the Lamb, but before that, there will be the destruction of the Lamb. The kingdom turning against the women and surrendering to the beast. What would happen would be these nations will turn against the woman. The beast, in the end, will turn against the woman sitting on the beast. And that will be the kingdoms, because the beast will be the kingdoms, turning against the woman and surrendering to the beast in verse 16 and verse 17. And that would, of course, be leading to their destruction. And we have in verse 14 the battle between Antichrist and his army and the Lord Jesus Christ and his army at his second coming in chapter 19. Christ will come from heaven, and then Christ will have his army with him to conquer Antichrist and his army and destroy them finally. Chapter 17 gives us the ecclesiastical aspect of Babylon. Chapter 18 gives us the commercial and cultural aspect of Babylon. Would this be a literal Babylon? I'm not sure here. But chapter 18 will give us an idea of how Babylon is going to be destroyed finally at the end of the Great Tribulation. Please remember, the two Babylons in chapter 17 and 18, they are different in one way. One aspect is with regard to its religion, and the other aspect is with regard to its commercial and cultural aspect. So, they are different because in chapter 17, we find that the harlot is hated by the kings of the earth, whereas in chapter 18, it is loved by the kings, so that when she was destroyed, the people mourned and lamented. She was destroyed by the kings of the earth, whereas in chapter 18, she was destroyed by the judgment of God. It's God that will destroy. And so, we find the two Babylons different. Finally, chapter 18, we end now. Very quickly only, 2 minutes. Revelation 18, 1 to 19, give you an outline, and you have an idea of what it's all about. The description, the interpretation and application. The description, Babylon the Great is fallen, verse 2. And that will refer to a rebuilt Babylon, I'm not sure. Would you refer still to the Roman Catholic system? Or would it refer to Babylon being rebuilt and then having commerce, economical development, and so on? Well, it seems to be so, but then again, we cannot be very decisive on this point. Or could it be representative Babylon, symbolic, figurative? Whatever it is, whether it refers to the religious aspect of Babylon or a physical aspect of Babylon, both will be destroyed and both will be killed. Final call. The call to separate from her so that we will escape the judgment. Ah, by the way, we are not there. We are not there. We shall not be there. Because the rapture would have taken place. If you are there, I'm sorry. But those of us who have believed in the Lord Jesus Christ, we are no more there. The rapture, the church had been taken up in chapter 4 and 5 of Revelation. So we will not be there in chapter 6 onwards. So that is the good news to us all. Still, there is a call for the people to come out. Although the people there at that time, not the church, not the Christians, they will be mourning among the kings. There will be the merchants. There's a lot of commerce going on, a kind of business. And there will be sailors doing the transporting of trade from port to port and so on. Or it will be, at that time, there will be great business going on. But all this will be brought to the end, in the end times, and all will be destroyed. Okay, so with this comes down. Babylon will be cast down, chapter 18, verses 20, 24, completely destroyed. The call to celebrate in heaven, heaven will rejoice. The city is compared to a millstone that will be thrown into the sea and completely sunk. The city will be completely destroyed. It will be no more in chapter 18. And then Christ will come. So, I have gone through this very quickly. You have no time to take down notes. But if you're interested, go to the website and copy the notes if you want. I end now. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, and that you receive not her plagues." Not addressed to us, because we are Christians. Addressed to the tribulation saints who have been faithful to the Lord. Come out among them. Babylon is fallen. With this, I end, and then I do trust that this study of Babylon and Jerusalem, well, may not give us a great understanding of everything, but just a brief outline of what is recorded in the scriptures. The Lord bless all of you.